So today I'm going to be talking about how CropCyst microbasin model can be used to inform variable rate nitrogen management and dryland farm profitability. And the area of interest for this study is the Pacific Northwest cereal grain producing region. It's most of eastern Washington, parts of northeastern Oregon, and far western Idaho. And for this particular talk, I'm going to be focused on the annual cropping zone, where farmers are using a winter wheat, spring wheat, and generally a legume in this three-year rotation. So here, for those of you that are not familiar with the area, this is what the landscape looks like. It's highly heterogeneous. We've got a lot of spatial variability within these fields. And to kind of highlight that, I'll give you, this is a cross-section of our average hill slope in the Palouse. On our south-facing slopes, we tend to have higher yields than our north-facing slopes, and we have a lot of exposed clay knobs where we have really low yields, maybe even only 20 bushels per acre. And this is a dry land system, of course, so in those areas that are really, really low yielding, adding more nitrogen is not going to increase our yields. So what we're looking at is how can we manage this landscape, potentially using variable rate fertilizer, precision fertilizer application. So in order to effectively manage that, we really need to understand the spatial variability. We want to understand the dynamics, the drivers, and the stability of these different yielding zones through time. So we're taking a cropping systems model approach. And what we don't want to do is use point-based simulations where we have one point that represents a certain area in the landscape. We want to have fully distributed, spatially continuous simulations so that we can really get at those dynamics and the stability through time. So there's this new kind of in-development model, CropCyst Microbasin. It's this exciting new 3D version of CropCyst, and that is the model that I'm using on this study, and I'm not gonna, before I get into the details of the model, I wanna give you my quick take-home messages, which are I'm gonna show you that CropCyst Microbasin is able to accurately simulate our field site conditions, and there are many potential applications including looking at biophysical questions, economic questions, risk assessment, and even specific management. So here's kind of a breakdown of CropCyst Microbasin model, as simple as I can make it. We have all sorts of detailed inputs that go into it, from weather, the physical characteristics on the landscape, our farm management practices, tillage, fertilizer, and a lot more detail, crop growth parameters, which we can use the plethora of wheat research on the Palouse to inform what we're using there, and soil physical characteristics and setting our initial conditions in the soil based on what we've actually measured on the landscape. And the model gives us a lot of outputs with detail in the water balance, nutrient cycling, such as nitrogen loss, emissions, and crop harvest parameters, and even in-season crop growth. And then a lot of soil detail as far as different nutrient concentrations through time and at the end of the simulation. So step number one is to input our data from this heavily instrumented field site. So this is it's about 11 hectare watershed that's in this winter wheat, spring wheat legume rotation. And at the green dots, we have a lot of soil measurements. We have in-situ soil sensors, soil moisture probes, and then at the black dots, we have additional instantaneous soil measurements. And we also take crop harvest parameters and in-season measurements at those green locations. So we take all of that and we convert it into 10 by 10 meter inputs distributed across the landscape, and we can put that then into our model. Our first observations were in 2011, and we are still taking observations out on this field today. So we can run it from 2011 to today, compare the outputs of the model to what we've actually observed in the last 4 years. And here's an example of the biophysical things that I can look at. I'm going to just share a couple of these comparisons with you. An example of, so at the outlet of the watershed, we have a surface runoff flume where we have continuous measurements of surface runoff. And the blue line is our simulated surface runoff in millimeters per day through 2012 and 2013. And the black line is our observed runoff from the basin. The Nash Sudcliffe is at 0.62, which is considered a very good fit. So we're doing well with our surface runoff. Here's an example of a comparison of soil water content. And this, on the map, these soil samples are taken from the green locations. And on the graph, we have our simulated water content on the y-axis, our observed water content on the x-axis. This is volumetric water content. And The observed soil water content comes from those 12 locations at 5 different depths, from 0.3 meters to 1.5 meters, and across 3 different seasons. We have fall, spring, and summer. So we're capturing that spatial variability. Certain areas dry sooner than other areas, and through time. And then here's an example more just looking at the temporal variability of soil water content. So on the x-axis, we have the date again, 2012 through 2013, and our volumetric water content on the y-axis. The black line is our simulated water content, continuous through time. This is hourly data. And then the gray line is our soil moisture probes. And we have 4 soil sampling dates where we actually went out and took soil cores. Here's our volumetric water content for those brown circles. Then here is our crop yield and nitrogen uptake on the field. These are averages across the watershed. So our simulated yield was 87 bushels per acre, and from the grower's yield monitor, the average was 91. Nitrogen uptake simulated was 138 kilograms nitrogen per hectare, and then the observed was 137, and that observed is coming from, we have a remote sensing team on our project, and they've ground truthed this rapid eye images using NDRE and hand measurements on the ground. So that's an example of some of the comparisons that we've made that we have more. So we're feeling good about our ability to actually simulate that the variability on our field site, and then we want to start to look at the biophysical and economic outcomes of variable rate fertilizer use and the spatial variability on the landscape. So for the economic assessment, I'm looking at returns to risk, which is essentially profits. We take our crop price, put in crop yield that the model gives us, and subtract the cost of production, which includes the cost of fertilizer. So when we're doing variable rate, that's kind of the big variable there within cost of production. So here's an example of some of the applications that we can do. And there's a lot, many, many more applications that we've been looking at, but I'm just going to give you a few examples of where we can go with this. So you can see we have variable yields across the landscape. We've mostly been talking in this session in bushels per acre, so I'll just say bushels per acre, but I have the tons per hectare up there too. So it ranges from 50 to 110 bushels per acre. And then I want to focus in on this low yielding area. This is at the upper end of the watershed. And the model also gives us parameters on, or outputs of nitrogen stress and water stress. In this low-yielding area, you can see the areas that are predominantly stressed out by low nitrogen are different than the areas that are more stressed out by water. So this can help us kind of think about what's happening on this landscape and how we may manage it moving forward. Another example of what we can do across the whole field is apply that returns to risk or the profit calculation at each of these pixels and see what areas of the field are we making the most money and what areas are we either not making money or actually losing money. So the areas in red the low yielding area, we're actually losing money in those. So this can help us communicate with growers as far as where they're doing well and where they might need some improvement. Okay, then another application is we can focus in on just one particular hill slope rather than looking at the entire watershed. The biggest reason I did this is just computing power. The model ran a lot faster, so I was able to do more simulations. So here's an example. Say we have this hill slope, it's broken up into 5 sections. We apply 180 kilograms of nitrogen. This includes fall and spring application. And then here's our range of yields. That's in tons per hectare, but it's roughly 60 to 95 bushels per acre. So the low yields at the top, the high yields at the bottom. Then we apply a variable rate and compare our yields. So rather, we just apply a total of 40 kilograms of nitrogen at the top, but still apply the 180. And we see yield losses in each of these sections of the hill slope, but when we apply the profit calculation, our overall profits on the hill slope increase by $25 per hectare, even with these small losses. Of course, there's consideration of grain quality, and that just gets into detail that I won't talk about right now. But we also see lower nitrogen losses, so considering environmental effects, that we're seeing the benefit of this variable rate. And then, really quickly, the lower section, we see small decreases. This equates to 3 to 1 bushel per acre loss in these 2 bottom sections. But we're applying the exact same amount of fertilizer at these locations. With the uniform and the variable rate. But so why are we actually losing yield there? Well, this the hill slopes in this area tend to have really shallow hydraulically restrictive horizons, and that generates subsurface lateral flow. Previous researchers have documented that very well, but it's harder to track the nitrogen through the landscape. But we can track it using the model. And so when we apply the less nitrogen at the top, there's less nitrogen that's then being transported to the bottom. With these shallow horizons, it keeps that nitrogen within the root zone, and that can, so it's this lateral redistribution of nitrogen that's contributing to those downslope yields. And this has really important management considerations when a lot of growers base their yield, their prescription fertilizer maps on yield. So they see the higher yield at the bottom, lower yield at the top, they decrease their fertilizer application at the top, but we're losing down at the bottom, potentially, on this particular hill slope. Okay, so in conclusion, we've got a confidence in our ability to simulate the field site and capture that spatial variability. There's a lot of potential uses of this model as a tool to look at spatial variability, understand those processes better, the drivers, and then also apply profitability metrics so that we can communicate this better with growers. And the model gives us this ability to kind of track the nitrogen through the landscape, which is really hard to do on the actual land. So this lateral redistribution of nitrogen can contribute to downslope yield, and really like to do more simulations with this as far as when this actually applies and maybe when it does not apply on the landscape. And then with that, just that hill slope scenario, you can see that the variable rate is more profitable even when we're having slight decreases in yield. So bringing in other factors than just maximizing production. And then we have all sorts of next steps. We want to apply this model at different field sites throughout the inland northwest grain producing region. These colors are areas where they have different cropping rotations, with the irrigated being that purple area, and then working our way over to the higher precipitation in the east. We want to further assess the drivers of spatial variability. This map is showing the distributed nitrogen uptake that the model is giving us in comparison to the NDRE predictions. And so there's areas where NDRE predicts that the remote sensing predicts nitrogen uptake will be higher, and then other areas where the model predicts that it will be higher. And we can, play around with our soil parameters and figure out what are the actual drivers of this and what are the reasons, or ask questions about why certain areas are higher or lower. Eventually, we want to do long-term simulations, look at climate change impacts, yield probability curves, assessing risk, and then tie it all up into a pretty little bow to support outreach and education efforts, or into some sort of decision support tool. This CropSys microbasin is it's not very user friendly, so we need to kind of make it digestible to communicate to growers. And then acknowledgments: the growers, first and foremost, we're working on private land, so they make all of this work possible. I have funding through the site-specific climate-friendly farming project, and also research support through the REACH project. And all of these collaborators or coworkers have contributed data and knowledge that would make this work otherwise impossible. So thanks to all of them. And if any of you have any questions. Yeah.
Nicole showed a really nice agreement on model versus actual grain yields. I assume that was on a field level basis.
Right.
If you look at the spatial output of the model versus the yield monitor data, what does that agree?
Yeah, there's certain areas where there's certain areas where the yield monitor is measuring higher, and there's other areas where the yield monitor is measuring lower. So that the root mean square error, it's are essentially a buffer of 14 bushels per acre, where we're either over-predicting or under-predicting across the watershed when we look at each of those zones. And I'm working with we have soil scientists that are on this team and kind of spatial analyst people, so we're trying to figure out how can we take our point-based measurements and really understand what's happening between those points to hopefully improve that. And so it's a work in progress, but yeah, interesting.
Okay, well, we'll have to move on. Well, thank you.
Thank you.